Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood, staff writer of Purple Row. I'm here along with the preeminent monarch of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you today?
Oh, I'm under the weather. I have my vassal suiting the land far and wide for a cure for this malady which has overtaken the land.
Sorry to hear that. I was mentioning earlier I have some allergy issues. It's very cold today. We're recording on Saturday the 23rd, and for some reason winter has returned.
Well, it's Colorado. That's why it's returned.
Yeah. It's just sometimes it's more frequently cold than this.
What kind of makes me laugh is that people are like, oh my god, what is this snow in this time of the year? What is this?
Yeah.
And all I can say is, are you new here?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Go ahead.
It doesn't make it any more enjoyable, but it's not like it's a giant surprise. Like, oh my god, what is this?
No, it's just usually, from my experience, you don't go like a full month without weather like this, and then you just kind of forget about it. And,
oh, yeah.
So, if it had been like this a week ago, I wouldn't be quite as disturbed by it. But it's definitely produced an effect on me. I feel kind of, you know, lethargic and so forth. So
no, I got back in bed. Like, I mean, I got up at like 8-something on Saturday morning, and we're recording this on Saturday, for those of you wondering. Got up like 8 because, you know, my mind and body woke up and said, all right, get out of bed, stupid. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to go to bed. So, you know, walked out of bed in my pajamas, threw on my infamous bathrobe, wandered downstairs, bothered the cat, checked the website, screwed around a little bit, and then Matt wakes up and was like, hey, let's go to the beer store. I'm like, can we go to Santiago's too? All right. So reality was we had to go get my car first because I left it at the bar, and that was a fun time because I got to walk home the night before. Get my car, go to the beer store, got Santiago's, got beer making supplies, came back home. Now Matt and Carlos are brewing. I just got back into bed. It's cold.
And that's the story of Andrew's morning.
Yeah, exactly. Word to the wise, if you don't want to walk home, make sure you monitor your intake.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about this past week in baseball. We had a trade go down yesterday. The story behind Brad Emos is that he was Rule 5 selection for New York. We saw him in the New York series. He was designated for assignment, and when a Rule 5 player is taken off the roster, he has to be returned to his original team, which was Toronto. Toronto accepted him, but they didn't really have any reason to keep him, I guess. So they were looking to trade him, and it just so happened that we managed to acquire him. We traded Chris Malone, much to your chagrin, I'm sure, because of the Carl Malone meme that you created.
No, yeah, that's just it. The Rockies are so tired of me making fun of him that they decided to trade him to ruin my fun.
Well,
that has to be. It's the only logical answer.
And also a potential player to be named later or Cash are involved as well.
From us to them?
Yes.
Okay, I must have missed that part of the deal. That makes it. I was going to say, we gave up absolutely nothing to get this guy, because, I mean, God bless Chris Maloney. I'm sure he's a great teammate and stuff like that, but as far as Major League impact goes, he's 27 and still in AA with a career mid-4 ZRA, so let's not fool ourselves here. I hope he finds a way to sneak to the majors in Toronto. I mean, really, I do, but, you know, past that, he clearly wasn't going to be making much of an impact on the 2011 Rockies. So, you know, who knows? If third base doesn't pick itself up, we might see Emos in the majors before we know it.
You're right. Just real quick on Malone's situation. He had declared free agency after last offseason, and he was one of the guys that we re-signed to come back. And so, you know, he's past that point where he's on an original minor league contract, which means at this point, even being traded to the Blue Jays this season as a double-A player, any hope he needs to have in the majors might even be with yet another organization after this season, if he can find a job on a triple-A team somewhere.
Interesting.
Back to Emos. Tell us a little bit about what you know about him, because there was some, I mean, he was a highlight of the Rule 5 draft. There was a lot of interest in him. There was some surprise when Toronto didn't protect him at the reserves deadline last year. And there was even buzz at one point that if the Rockies were to make a Rule 5 selection, it might be him. Of course, we didn't, as we usually don't. But we ended up with him anyway. So tell us a little bit about what that buzz was about.
Well, the buzz really is that the guy has some decent pop to his bat. His last season, he played between a AA New Hampshire and AAA Las Vegas in Toronto's minor league organization. And between the two levels, he batted a combined 290, 397, 476. That's an 874 OPS. He hit 15 home runs. He stole 13 bases. He walked 81 times. He had good strong numbers for a 24-year-old in the upper levels of the minor leagues. The downside obviously is that just that those numbers don't obviously directly translate to the major leagues. They could, and as the debate has just exploded and argued in every which way, I guess with all players, minor league numbers don't necessarily translate. If we look at Mr. Herrera.
Yeah,
however,
it's best to say the same thing.
However, if the trend does hold, as it likely will for Brad Imos, we could be looking at, very solid bench player production from him. He's played mostly second base in his career in the minor leagues. He, Total Zone in 2009 ranked him as a +8 second baseman in AA, which I'm kind of surprised that, Total Zone actually covers the minor leagues, but I guess their methodology works more on play-by-play data than it does a gridded field ranking. So, the point is that he makes his plays, and that's, positive to see a strong defensive second baseman in the minors. Anyhow, if Eric Young does make the full conversion to the outfield, Imos will likely be, the full-time second baseman in the springs. Mm-hmm. And if he can survive that, I guess they're just kind of waiting to see what happens in the majors right now. Because, we're not that far into the season. And Herrera's starting to come back down to earth. And Jose Lopez, after his, two clutch games, has tanked. And Wigginton mm-hmm. doesn't look good. And Stewart's been demoted, which we'll talk about in a few minutes here. But I guess they're just looking to see if they have a... And they need to throw someone else in the wall to see if they stick, if they have that guy. And then again, they also might be keeping someone like Imos around, so if they need to promote him to the majors, then they won't have to worry about Chris Nelson as much. I guess I don't know why they wouldn't just promote Chris Nelson, but I'm guessing they just want to see if he can survive a full season of AAA before they start looking at him as a viable Major League candidate. They're weighing their depth options right now, and they're just adding to it. And worst case scenario, we added a good depth bench player. So I will cry about that deal later.
Yeah, and it should be noted, of course, that because we traded for him after he had been taken off the Mets roster, he just returns to his regular minor league contract, meaning that he's under control for another 3 seasons for us for free. And so basically, we don't have any pressure to, start him on a fast clock, like any Rule 5 player has to be. Obviously it means he's Rule 5 eligible again. We might have to protect him if he has a good season in the off season, but, we'll worry about that when we get there, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the way that they're stacking their cards for call-ups, because, I don't know. I keep hearing Willie Taveras could be ready, and why on earth would you call up Willie Taveras? I really want to know whose window on whose Porsche Cole Garner broke, because I think he's the best call-up option, personally.
He's having a great season so far.
Yeah, I don't have any faith in any other of the options, really, either, except for possibly Nelson. I don't think Eric Young's ready, because I don't think they figured out what they want to do with him yet. So it's not even so much I don't think he could swing it. I just don't know if anyone knows what's going on with Eric Young right now. He's doing all right from what I saw, but Taveras might be the worst batter down in the Springs right now.
He is in terms of the starting players, but also both Garner and Taveras are on the inactive list at the time of this recording because they both got hurt lightly, so not enough to go on the DL, but enough to open their roster spot up for a few days.
Well, I guess that makes sense in the short term why Garner's not the name immediately mentioned, but it's the fact that we just never hear him mentioned. I just don't understand it, frankly. I really could see, I mean, Seth Smith in blah, blah, blah. Let me kind of reset my train of thought here. I'm kind of sick, if you couldn't all tell by the extra nasal voice. So my, Friday at work was a debacle trying to focus on anything at once. So right now I'm trying to collect my thoughts as a debacle as well. But the thought was, if Seth Smith and Ryan Spielbergs don't swing it this year, they could both be gone next year. It's not looking like that's the case with Smith, but it could be with Spielbergs.
Yeah.
Anyways, the point being that, Cole Garner looks to be the obvious replacement for Spielbergs as a corner outfielder who is right-handed, and then Charles Blackman will be the obvious replacement for Smith, being a just another outfielder who is left-handed, and Blackman's obviously probably a better defender than both of them as well. But the two of them just make the most sense as far as outfield replacements go. I guess it kind of depends on, Garner, they both obviously have time in the organization, but I don't know. We'll really have to see how the rest of the season unfolds. But I just want to see Cole Garner play outside of Colorado Springs. Maybe I'm just being selfish, but that's what I want.
Well, sooner or later, they're going to have to reset to a standard roster of 7 bullpen pitchers and 5 bench players. Right now, we had called up Clay Mortensen to serve as sort of a temporary long reliever with the strain we've been putting on the what had been previously a long reliever-less bullpen, and people like Belial and Franklin Morales were having to, stretch out as most they could, which is maybe like 2+ innings at best for either of them, and kind of combine to serve that role.
But hey, Houston Street tossed 3 scoreless against the Pirates, or I don't want to hear it.
He only threw like 33 pitches, though.
But he's awesome.
It was a fantastic outing, but he's obviously not a long reliever.
No, he's just awesome.
Yeah, but
This isn't a rational argument. Don't worry, Greg.
I expect rationality from you, and so I get thrown off when it doesn't happen. Anyway, sooner or later we're gonna probably put Mortensen back down, and we will have to decide which position player we want to call up. And, you know, we have a couple roster options for that. Eric Young and Chris Nelson are probably the two more obvious replacements for Ian Stewart on a roster. But at the same time, if they're worried about outfield depth, Cole Garner is on that list. And as you mentioned, people are continuing to throw around the name of Willie Taveras, which would be only the most temporary of temporary solutions. But, I would agree that even if he were doing well in Colorado Springs, there wouldn't really be a justifiable reason to bring him up. The outfield depth is, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought up an outfielder, but at the same time, it seems like they feel okay with the outfield depth we have on the roster right now. And so even if they were to bring up an outfielder, I would agree that Taveras would be an unusual choice.
They're kind of overstating Wigginton's versatility, just like they did Melvin Mora last year. Ty Wigginton is not an outfielder. I'm sorry. He's doing okay as an infielder.
Mm.
And I understand that the team's like, well, you know, we're going to go ahead and sacrifice some defensive blah, 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 so we can get some offensive blah, blah, blah. Well, Wigginton's not really doing either that well. He's made some good plays at third base. I will not take that away from him. But a couple good plays at third base is not a good fielder make. It makes a couple good plays.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and of course, with Wigginton now, he's probably going to be the most common feature at third base. Might see some Jose Lopez there as well, but Lopez is in a bad spot at this point, and when we first got Lopez, this is where I wanted him, which was on the bench as a utility type. The fact that he got started suddenly getting considered for starting second baseman was, it should have been expected. But at the same time, I'm not, even as a Lopez supporter, basically, I'm not really bothered by the fact that he's on the bench right now. So that leaves Wigginton at the regular third baseman, and that returns our outfield depth basically to where it was before. Of course, if they needed Wigginton to play the outfield, that's probably when they'd put Lopez at third base. But this is really why just about anybody in any position, except maybe catcher, could be called up right now. So we'll just have to see where that goes. It may happen today, even. But so far, they've kept that eight-man bullpen. They might do it through the rest of the series, maybe through next week. I really have no idea. But
well, do we ever figure out, did Purple Row ever kind of get our hands on, because I might have missed it, but why on earth we left Clayton Mortensen up?
Because
he pitched 6 innings of long relief, and then he's obviously not ready to pitch again for several days.
Mm-hmm.
That's a starter's workload right there. So, I mean, that puts him on a 4 or 5 day rotation before he can pitch again. So that's a dead spot right there. Why would you not call up Daly?
I can't say for sure. The issue with that is that there's some strange rules that I try to maintain an understanding of all the transactions issues. When you have somebody you just called up, as far as I understand, you cannot option them back without a certain amount of time going by without exposing them to waivers. I couldn't find that in writing. I could have sworn I heard that before. I searched everywhere and I couldn't find it nailed down, even in the player's contract. However, it would make sense that that's the reason they didn't option him down like the next day. At the same time, it's been a lot more than that now. And it looks like, at this point, they see him as the best option for long relief right now. They're higher on him than that long term. I don't expect him to keep a bullpen spot very long. I think right now, it's all speculation, but I would say they're trying to get their bearings on the rotation, figure out where everybody's at, make sure everybody's healthy and that they can continue to, count on them, at least usually, to go, 5+ innings. And then, either worry about getting a more, standard long reliever up on the team or abandoning the long relief thing again and, maybe pushing back onto Morales and Belial to serve that role. So again, that's another thing where I don't really know where it's going to go. But when they do make that move, and I'm pretty sure they're going to have to eventually, because even if they're feeling more confident about their bullpen depth right now, they have to be feeling less confident about their bench depth, because anytime you have only 4 players, one of which is a backup catcher, you're, options are kind of hamstring there.
Well, because especially when you have only one backup catcher and one I can pinch hit only guy on the bench. I don't understand why I guess I do understand in a small sense why they keep the 8-man bullpen, but it's not like the Pittsburgh series was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the starters have been giving decent, halfway decent inning loads anyhow. Nothing outlandishly bad. And, I mean, is a bullpen still this tired? I'm more worried about the outfield because Gonzalez has been battling the flu of some sort for the past forever. He's been batting like crap, and I'm not necessarily saying bench him or DL him or whatever, but, maybe just give him a little extra time to kind of just sit and watch, get healthy again, kind of start watching some pitches again, talk with the coaches for a while, and just get Garner some reps out there or Spielborgs or just whoever. In lieu of, super struggling, sick Carlos Gonzalez. But instead we have Clayton Mortensen, who just kind of like, do-do-do-do, taking a roster spot and not doing anything. Whatever. I mean,
yeah.
These roster moves confuddle me, but I think that the team is kind of, it almost looks like they're kind of putting their hands over their ears and closing their eyes and being like, nope, there's no depth issues. We have Ty Wigginton. He's versatile.
Yeah, I certainly agree that they are overplaying that, although it's not quite to the extent as Melvin Mora was done, because at least with Wigginton, he's been in a variety of roles. Even as a starter, he's moved around in his career. Whereas Melvin Mora, when we got him, had been a third baseman for like the last 6 years only third base, and they kind of, expected us to buy that he was versatile going out of the gate, as opposed to having to kind of retrain himself into moving around. Whereas at least with Wigginton, you have somebody who's used to that.
Not true enough there. don't know. I mean, just because he's used to it doesn't necessarily mean he's good at it.
No, I agree. And I still think it's overplayed. I just, basically, I see the comparison between the two, but I'm more comfortable moving Wigginton around than I was Mora. I only felt comfortable with Mora at third base, basically.
Gotcha. No, Wigginton looks all, he's passable at third, and he looks good at first, so, good yeah. enough. I've seen him make some decent stretches on awkward throws, so.
Sure.
You know, I'm not gonna complain about Ty Wigginton at first base or third base. It's just when we get to the outfield, I mean, it's a different kind of range, and you know that as well as everyone. It's a different kind of fielding entirely, and I just don't think he can do it very well. But, speaking of third base, we should probably bring up Ian Stewart.
Yeah, we had mentioned a couple weeks previous that they were going to have to start looking at the possibility of sending him down after that injury right on the first play of spring. Stewart fell behind quite a ways and clearly never really caught back up. And the fact that his position on the team was costing him at bats because we had so much depth there, there just wasn't really any chance anymore that he was going to get it going here. So they did go ahead and send him down to AAA. He's gotten into two games so far. I check the minor league box scores every day, but I don't like memorize them. I know that Stewart's been striking out a lot, and that was, of course, one of his problems at the major league level so far. But they intend, from what I understand, to keep him down there at least a couple weeks, possibly up to a month, which is kind of the same thing they did with Iannetta and Fowler last year. Both of those were about 3 weeks long, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So
they were both down for about a month, and they came back ready to roar. So
right, and I mean, so after two games filled with strikeouts, I'm not gonna get even more worried yet. He has several more weeks to readjust. Yeah. And we have to look at this as sort of like an extended spring training for him. He just
Which
needs
is really
to,
what it is.
Yeah, he just needs to face some regular pitchers that are, you know, AAA quality, which is, you know, not going to...
Extended spring training quality.
Basically, exactly. It's always interesting to follow those... The roster down there, the AAA roster has been changing so much. They have so many unusual players down there and more veteran types than usual. I had mentioned on previous shows that there's sort of a collection of, people down there that normally you wouldn't see because, we would be keeping the super lower level journeyman types, and now we have some people like Josh Fields and Mike Jacobs and so forth that that kind of fit that mold, but are of a higher quality than usual. And you can tell that this is probably because they have a lot of concerns about their MLB depth, and they want people who would at least be possibly passable at the major league level than not.
Look at it this way. What prospects are really chomping at the bit to get a AAA? The ones who really are might be Will Rosario from
yes.
AA.
Yes.
And he does look very ready, or at least he's looking ready so far. Again, very early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if we have an entire lineup of AA players who have been kept in AA, you know, because we have, you know, Brad Imus and Chris Nelson's kind of a bad example, but, you know, Mike Jacobs at first base, it's not as if, who do we have in, it's Pollock in AA, isn't it?
No, Pollock was assigned to, the Sky Sox just recently in place of Tavares.
Okay.
He had been in extended spring training. Are you talking about at first base in AA?
Yeah, it's Paulson?
Ben Paulson, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I couldn't remember if Ben Paulson had started in single A. Anyways. It's, I mean, Ben Paulson had an exciting spring, but he needs to be in double A right now. He's not up to triple A
level. Oh, yeah.
Level.
This is his first year at double A, and
exactly.
he didn't make a case for skipping it, so.
So the farm has kind of become a, you know, people talk about how strong the Rockies farm is or whatever. It's a lot of deep drafts, but let's think about this. With a team that is supposed to be competing and is competing right now, you don't have any prospects who are absolutely demanding to be in triple A, that aren't already there, then you know, what's wrong with fielding a quasi-major league team in AAA? You know, it's a quadruple A team, and that's fine. I mean,
exactly.
Guys like Tavares, like Mike Jacobs, Alfredo Amazinga. I always want to say his name is Amazinga, you know.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be how it rolls off the tongue. Anyhow, the point is, you know, good. That's how you're supposed to do it when you're competing. If one of your guys goes down, you have a legit player to come up. Now, if they start skipping over, you know, some of these major league depth guys to go for someone else, I'm going to kind of scratch my head a little bit here. Like, you know, Tavares over Garner. But, you know, whatever. I would rather have these guys than, and I know I'm going to catch flack for saying this, but organizational filler type guys.
Right, which has been my basic position all along, that the AAA team doesn't look like it used to. We don't have the types of players that we did before who were, you know, journeyman types who had maybe gotten into one September call-up of Major League time, and that was about it. Now we have people who are former full-time starters in the major leagues who have fallen off and now have to kind of restart the cycle of getting back. And I think that is a more advantageous way to stack your AAA team when you're in our situation.
No, exactly. And, it's funny. I remember when I was playing, I always bring up my sim baseball leagues. We had this one guy in the league. All it was the most obnoxious guy to manage against, because he would get his major league team where he wanted, you know, make the bids in the big free agents or whatever. And then, I forgot what team he played for, but he just had all this free agent money left over to spend. And if you don't spend it, it's not like you get to, like, you know, extra. It's a video game. It's not like you're going to see profits or be like, ooh, look, I'm making money. So what he would do is just go and find all the guys that everyone else is going to offer minor league contracts to, or, you know, some sort of split contract, and just offer them, like, $1.5 million or something like that. Just not stupid amounts of money, but, like, when Corey Sullivan got that $1 million contract from the Rockies, and I think it was 08, to play in AAA, just so they wouldn't have to worry about waivers with him,
mm-hmm.
or whatever the reason was. No, it was waivers, because who's going to want to claim $1 million salary off waivers?
Right.
He would do this with like 1 million players. So we'd have this AAA team stocked with like the Pittsburgh Pirates or you know, the Houston Astros or something like that.
Right.
And not quite that little, because there's never the one big ticket player, but you're like, damn it, that was my minor league depth right there. Those are my Mike Jacobs and Willie Tavares's and, you know, guys like that who I'd probably call up to be a 25th man if someone else got hurt. And it just kind of makes me laugh a little, because that's like exactly what the Rockies are doing right now. You got a minor league team of Greg Reynolds, Clay Mortensen, Billy Buckner. Did Stultz ever go to Japan, or is he still?
He did not. He was converted to the bullpen. He is serving the swingman role that I thought Alan Johnson would serve instead, because I had been assuming that Stultz was taking that opportunity, but he didn't. So
there you go. So, I mean, it's like the major league team in the minors, that if you called them all up, they'd probably still lose, you know, 100 games, but they wouldn't lose, you know, 150 games is the difference.
And perhaps more importantly, you wouldn't be destroying anybody's career by calling them up too early.
Exactly.
They're kind of proxies for people who are going to be ready in a couple of years. It's funny, because if you look, I've mentioned before that if you look at the Rockies roster right now, very few of these players are going to be gone next year. Three of the 25 people on the current active roster are very likely to be gone. And any others,
Lopez,
Giambi, and the Cook. And Cook is on the DL, actually, so
okay.
he's only sort of pseudo-active.
So you could say, well, maybe even Spielberg's contract is up this year, though. So
well, no, technically it's not. People get confused because they see the contract ending, but Spielberg's is not going to have enough service time to declare.
It's going to be arbitration
again, which means if we choose to get rid of him, which is a legit possibility, we have to be the ones to initiate that. We have to non-tender him, exactly. So I'm not saying that
he's not a free agent.
Exactly. He can't declare. We have to make that happen, basically. Lopez is very close to being free agent eligible. It should happen over the next 10 days sometime. I'm on Rocky's roster. I've been keeping track of the service time live, so I'll know exactly when he is able to be free agency eligible. And, I mean, it's pretty much a given because he would have to basically leave the team as a free agent anyway, not to reach that amount of service time. Yeah. So, and then of course Giambi is, Giambi and Cook both have contract options. And I would assume that both of them will be turned down. But
why on earth would the Rockies put an option on Jason Giambi?
It was part of his. I can't really say why, but it's only for $1 million. So,
well, no, still, I mean, why would you put an option on a 40-year-old baseball player who has no defensive upside? I don't know. It just seems silly when we could probably get Mike Jacobs to come up and do roughly the same thing.
Well, keep in mind that we said when we brought Giambi in again after his brief September with us in 2009 that that was silly. And then we were sure once again this offseason that he was done, and then we signed him to a minor league contract. So there's something about him that they just feel is worth keep bringing back one way or the other, and
it doesn't make any roster sense. And right now, the way that this team is playing out at the moment, it really feels like having his roster spot being for pinch hitter only is really hamstringing the team, because it's like we talked about at the beginning there. We have two usable bench spots, and that is, you know, whichever one isn't starting out of Spilly or Smith. And then,
whichever isn't starting, Lopez, and if he's not starting Herrera or Wigginton or
one of those, one of that little around there.
Well,
but, I mean, it's a good versatile bench there as far as those two players go, but then you have backup catcher who doesn't do anything and first base DH pinch hitter guy.
Well, of course, the argument in favor of Giambi is there's no left-handed power off the bench.
I understand that argument. I just still don't like it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if we get into trouble, we are like, oh crap, what do we do now? We have a backup catcher and a statue. What do we do now?
Throw out the statue.
Yeah, exactly. Just standing there first. I mean, it's not like Giambi's not willing to do it or whatever. It's just a big, I don't know. I mean, it's like having a car that doesn't run in your garage or something like that.
I suppose. Except
but it looks really cool because it's all painted and waxed, but engine doesn't really work. You can kind of start it once in a while, but it usually backfire a few times and shut down after about 30 seconds.
You can pull it out of the garage, but you can't drive it around.
Exactly. Yeah. You can bring it out and wash it, and all your neighbors are like, ah, oh, it's really cool, and you put it back in the garage.
There you go.
Right. Where's Todd Helton? Can I drive to the grocery store and then come back, and you have to put it back in the garage for at least like a day, maybe two, especially if it's a day drive after a night drive, and yeah.
If you leave him out in the cold, he will not work the next day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not battery issues.
Interesting. I don't know anything about cars, so.
Well, see, the thing is, we just got a new hybrid, too. And everyone's like, look at the hybrid. It's stupid, but everyone drives it for some reason, and it's great. But you don't bring out the muscle car. Oh, no, no. We got to drive the little hybrid around because it's all small and efficient and stuff like that.
Who's the hybrid? You know? Herrera?
Yeah, that was a joke.
Okay.
Gotcha. That's kind of hoping. Yeah, all right. Well, hopefully you all got it before Greg went and answered it for you.
Okay. All right. So what were we talking about before the cars?
I don't even
bench,
remember.
Bench depth and so forth.
I just bumped my microphone, sorry.
No problem.
We were talking about bench options because we started out with the
Triple A depth. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think we're done talking about Triple A depth. I don't think anybody cares about Triple A depth anymore.
Oh, That's too bad.
Yeah, I know you care about AAA depth.
Yes, I do.
Probably think of something else major league. So, no hitters, huh?
Yeah, we twice in this past week have come dangerously close to being no hit. Once by Tim Lincecum, and then yesterday by Anibal Sanchez, or as Drew Goodman would say, Anibal Sanchez. Yesterday's game was a little scarier, I think. I mean, Sanchez has already thrown one no-hitter, and he looked to be in that zone, if you will, whereas I think Lincecum looked a little more Lincecum-ish, which is certainly not a bad thing because the guy is a fantastic pitcher, but I think he feels a little bit more touchable than some of the other dangerous pitchers do. And I say that because he obviously has very good numbers against everybody, but for some reason I feel more confident against him than, say, Matt Cain. Matt Cain scares me a lot more. And, of course, naturally, we touched up Matt Cain more than we ever have before. So
touched him up. We took a sledgehammer yeah. on Matt Cain.
Yep.
No, I'm gonna disagree with you on that, because with Lincecum, watching his start, he was hitting his corners. He was mm-hmm. making his pitches. He was, I mean, I don't want to say that, like, Anibal Sanchez didn't earn any of his, you know, no-hit innings, but, you know, Lincecum just looked better doing it. Sanchez was sailing everything, and then his strike zone suddenly grew to the size of a garage
yeah.
door.
Yeah, from the size of an apple.
Yeah, exactly. And then Chacin got that apple instead. Like, I think I phrase it as in the game rap as being the size of a graham cracker. And because honestly, pitches that he was giving Sanchez strikes on, like the one that struck out Seth Smith in the sixth inning.
Yes, yes.
That was a good 6 inches below the knees or whatever. Yeah. I mean, not 6 inches, but it was not even remotely a strike. And he called it
definitely.
Smith out on that. Oh, that's definitely, you know.
When it comes to Lincecum, though, or I mean, rather when it comes to Sanchez, I agree that at first, especially, he was a bit off. And then also he got the benefit calls of that strange amorphous strike zone. But I don't know. You just kind of can detect the air of a pitcher's personality out there, and he kind of got into that weird mid-game zone where he was just throwing whatever he felt like. He had complete confidence in it, and Lincecum never really got to that point.
Well, if they gave me a strike zone as big as they did, I could go out there and have the confidence okay. to throw a no-hitter.
I suppose I mean, you could, but
It obviously wasn't all. There was, some, I mean, he had the typical no-hitter luck, like the liner that was going to go up the middle that bounced
yep.
off of him that he picked up
and ran to the bag. Yeah,
and ran into the bag that beat Tulowitzki.
That was actually a pretty cool play, to be honest.
Oh yeah, no, it was just blind luck that it hit him the way it did and yeah, didn't yeah. hurt him,
and that it bounced towards first base.
And then yeah, exactly. I mean. It's like magnetic balls in Florida. There's another one. I think Herrera had a ground, like, you know, something up the middle that would have, it was a liner up the middle, and second base Omar Infante was faded just in the right spot and was able to catch it just as it went over the outfield grass.
Yep.
It was just nothing would give line outs and miserable strikeout calls and we were jumping for joy when Fowler hit that bouncer through the hole at second base. But,
yeah.
You know, when Stanton came in to pick it up, he kind of bobbled it right there. I'm surprised they're not like, oh, see, error on the right fielder. Fowler reaches on error, not a single. And
well, that would have been really hard to justify because it was obvious that he was already at first base, practically.
No, the way the game went, I'm just saying. The way the strike zone was, the way everything was, I'm surprised they didn't try to give him it out on error anyways.
Right.
Or something ridiculous like that, but, I mean, no, it doesn't excuse the Rockies' play in general. All these little things I'm mentioning are these should have broken up the no hitter. Oh, just kidding, but you know, no hitter continues because nope, they didn't break it up because they found a glove or they bounced off his leg or they went into a warp tunnel that leads mm-hmm. right to, you know, somebody's glove. No, the Rockies are having a little bit of trouble at the moment getting a. Contact on the ball. We saw it in the first two games of the San Francisco
yep.
series until they lit up Matt Cain.
First series
and of
we
course
lost
somebody.
The,
I mean, I was reading
year.
Around the first series we lost on the year, and so far we've rebounded quite poorly by almost getting no hit again. But they got to figure something out. And one of the things they got to figure out soon here is Gonzalez. And I mentioned him earlier. You know, I'm not screaming for him to get benched because. You know, he was a National League batting title last year, and a lot, you know, part of that was good luck and good fortune and, you know, line drives dropping where they're supposed to and good things like that, but, I mean, he's a good ball player. There's no question about it, and he's just going through a nasty slump right now, but they gotta do something with him, and if that means sitting him just for a little bit longer, you know, give him a couple more days off, not because he needs the rest, but maybe he does, maybe that flu still is killing him, but, I don't know, I figure if they give him a few days off and just put out a consistent outfield of Spilly, Smith, and Fowler, just for the sake of saying, hey, just chill, sit, relax, you're fine, we're not mad at you, we just want you to get better and then get your head back into this, I think it'll do it some good. I really do.
That also will be probably a factor in deciding who gets called up to replace that Clay Mortensen roster spot. And it might be an argument in favor of somebody like Garner.
Free Cole Garner.
Yep. Let's see. Let's take a look at the next week. We finish up the Florida Marlins series And then we head to Chicago for three there. Another off day on Thursday. No more. Another week with no game thread for me.
Yeah,
and,
me
too. Then we come back and face Pittsburgh again, if I'm correct. I don't have the schedule in front of me.
I believe that's correct. I'm looking forward to going to see Pittsburgh, of course. I like the Pirates. I mean, I don't think they're a great team, but I mean, at the same time, I think Clint Hurdle does good things with young teams. They don't really have a rudder on their ship.
They just claimed Brandon Wood, too. That's going to be interesting.
That will be interesting. I mean, decent utility guy there, but they're not moving Pedro Alvarez off third base.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to take Lyle Overbay off first base. What else are they going to do with him? Garrett Jones would be the next candidate for first base. So, I mean, the list is kind of dropping on where Brandon Wood's gonna play, but, you know, whatever. I mean, they got, you know, Neil Walker at second, Sanu at short. I don't, whatever. I just like the, they got some good players in that team. And I think that they're gonna, you know, turn a few heads this year. Not so much in the sense of, look, they took the division. Although, the way the Central is, I wouldn't be surprised.
Ouch.
So it's such a crapshoot in that division.
I would still be surprised if the Pirates took that division.
I would really be surprised if they have zero pitching.
In their credit, they will probably not finish below the Astros. They have that going for them.
No, they do have pitching, though, because, what's his face? Why did I forget his name? Everyone's been raving about how he's fixed and he's like a new Roy Halladay or something like that. Crap, I have to pull this up now.
I might know who it is if you just gave me
Charlie
more hints than that.
Charlie Morton. Yeah, apparently he's their salvation of Pittsburgh pitching, and honestly, if Pittsburgh makes the playoffs somehow, I will laugh so hard and be so proud of that team, and so proud of Clint Hurdle, and I'm waiting for someone to say, see, we should have never gotten rid of Clint Hurdle.
Oh, God. I really don't like Clint Hurdle. I was never on the, fire Hurdle bandwagon just because, you know, in fact, I actually wrote one of my first writing contributions to the blog was an analysis on firing managers mid-season over the past 20 years or so, and how the teams who got off to bad starts that were replaced by managers mid-season fared. And there was one or two of like 25 that even made the playoffs. And of course, we end up making the playoffs that season.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
which is why, again, I kind of stand on my whole, you know, manager's contributions are marginal stance.
Yes.
But
my dislike of Hurdle is more just I don't think that he has a managerial style that I don't like, and that's just totally a personal thing. I'm sure certain players prefer.
Which style is that?
The extroverted, powerful, fatherly figure type who is, you know, kind of that traditional coach type, and I don't like the traditional coach type.
Coach from Cheers, that guy was great.
You know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, but I wanted to mention Cheers, because if I can mention Cheers, it's a good day.
Was that you who's watching Cheers recently or something?
Yeah, that was totally me.
Okay. I saw talking about Cheers recently.
Well, that was on the game thread last night. I was saying that the bar that I was at was kind of Cheers-like.
I was in that game thread briefly just to answer some transaction stuff, but I still.
Oh, no, this is the wrap. I scanned the thread a few times to make sure that things stayed in line and everyone was keeping their nose clean. And then I kind of tapped my baton against my hand and nodded and went back to whatever I was doing. And by that, I mean drinking beers.
What was that picture? Was that your actual bartender that you just asked to, like, post?
Oh, the guy pointing at me? Oh, yeah, that was Mike.
Okay.
He was not terribly thrilled with that. I mean, he wasn't, like, actually mad. He goes, you guys are bad baseball fans. What? You can't say that. He goes, yeah, I can. You guys are sitting there booing a no-hitter being broken up. Of course we are. We don't want to get no-hit. We have our pride.
Uh-huh.
It didn't work. He didn't believe us.
Oh.
Whatever, he laughed. He's a good sport about things and stuff.
All right.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm fading.
Yeah, and my eyes are still bothering me. So.
Hey, everyone, we're sick. Yay.
All right. Well, that's a show, I guess. We'll be back in a week on I almost said April the 25th. That's when this one's going to be on. May 2nd. It's already May.
Oh my gosh. No, it's not.
All right. Well, we will be back next Monday. And on behalf of myself and Andrew,